You remember the story you told me about the father bull talking to the son? They're up on this hill. They're looking down at a bunch of cows. And the son goes to the father, Dad, why don't we run down there and fuck one of these cows? And you remember what the father said? The father says, son, why don't we walk down there and fuck them all?
I told you that.
Yeah.
Why don't we fuck them all? That's funny. Okay, I get your point.
That is what makes him get the point? Welcome to Cut to Black, a Soprano Sit Down. We are here to discuss season one, episode six of The Sopranos, titled Pax Soprana. I am Jim Scampoli.
I am Jacob Burrows, and I'm now a proud 6 years old, and I'm rambunctious. I think I know The Sopranos. I honestly feel like if I stopped watching Sopranos from here on, not that I'm gonna, but if I did, I could, you know, fake my way through a conversation. Like, I've had the training. I feel like I get what The Sopranos is, and realizing that there's roughly 80 episodes left, I probably don't, and I look forward to seeing what happens next. But yeah, we're going to talk about episode six now.
And keep in mind, in case you haven't watched The Sopranos, like little six-year-old Jacob Burrows, we will only be discussing spoilers up through this episode, so there's no fear. You can hang out and discuss this episode with us. Yeah, all kinds of good stuff like that.
That's right. And so we just had a really good episode last week. Not that this episode doesn't have its moments, but it's kind of a comeback to reality. We snap back to reality and kind of reintroduce some stuff that we already know is going on. Like at the end of the episode, they have like the FBI taking pictures of them, which was the end of two episodes ago, too. They had the FBI taking pictures of them. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I thought they already figured out that Junior was the boss, but I guess this is where it happens. So it's actually like not moving super fast, slowly introducing us into the reign of Junior and everything going on with that. And of course, Tony has his little love story that I wasn't super on board with. I was kind of like Melfi in that regard. I was like, well, we know this isn't real, so it's not going to be the most like riveting stuff. But yeah, he's infatuated throughout the episode.
Yeah, this episode, we got to slow things down a bit, bring everyone back up to speed with where we're at back here in New Jersey. And yeah, we focused a lot on Tony's sex life and the women in his life and how that affects, I don't know, I guess how what his mind space is all about. I mean, we start out, he's still got Detective Home Alone on the case, following Melfi doing just mundane nonsense and having to like make a list of like, okay, then she went out to the gym and then she went home. And this day she went to the market. She only goes to the nice deli where they don't have any meatballs, but everything's Italian or whatever he says. And then, I mean, the running thing here with Tony and Detective Home Alone, and I guess rightfully so, is that Tony always treats this guy like shit for the most part. He clearly doesn't respect him, and is always kind of talking shit and kind of annoyed by him. And he is a degenerate piece of garbage. So I guess that's what happens.
Yeah. And I would have assumed after the previous encounter, where he beat up Melfi's boy, that Tony kind of called him off, because he finds out from Melfi in therapy a couple of episodes ago, and he's like, that fucking idiot, why I oughta, but then he doesn't oughta do anything, he doesn't do shit about it, he just says, I ought to do this, but he still has him tailing her, even though he's the worst, which I guess is kind of leading us into his growing kind of obsession with Melfi, because he obviously already got the all clear as far as, nah, she's not going to go rat him out. Like, she's not conspiring with some other mob person or whatever he thought she might be doing. So this is something else.
Yeah. And we're seeing it with his awkward, I mean, basically in the next scene, this episode has quite a few therapy scenes, and he does his awkward where he kind of comes in like as if you were going to the job site, like the construction site or whatever. Like, hey, I got coffees here. Who's good? What do you got? Decaf, right? Oh, we got over here. We got a French vanilla.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's just this weird, like, you know, I got you a coffee. And even like, I don't know. It just, I like how it's played out because it's such an awkward thing and they don't really need to add much because it's kind of like, what are you doing, dude? Like, this isn't a hangout session. You're going in for therapy. You're going in to, you know, discuss your truths and come to grips with your anxiety and depression. So,
yeah, and this is not a date either. Yeah. Specifically, we were not going to have a coffee here. So we got the junior squad led by whatever his fucking
Mikey.
Name is.
Mikey Palmisi.
They go in and kick a guy for running a poker table, and I'm not really up to speed enough that I know who, like, these people they're talking about are. Like, I'm with little Jimmy Altieri or whatever. I'm like, I'm sure that means something. I'm sure that's one of the guys on that leaderboard. I need one of those boards like the FBI has with all the names on them. I'm getting there. I will, but... But yeah, for now, I'm like, okay, that's bad because it's fucking Mikey, so it's obviously not a good thing that he's doing. And we also see Junior getting a nice suit for some sort of dinner, and he talks to the guy making it and finds out about how he lost his grandson. And I like this because Junior has, I feel, the same reaction that Tony Soprano would have, kind of. Like, he's a human being, Junior. He's like, what the fuck? Your grandson just, like, died from drugs? Oh, we can't allow this.
Yeah, even though, like, a good amount of his money is coming from that, there's this weird... Because even, like, Tony, the way he talks about the drugs and how it's affected, like, their business, because more so because of how the sentencing works and people turn it into rats and whatnot... But it is funny how in the, like, at least the way that we see the mafia or the mob portrayed, since it's supposed to have somewhat of this elegance and this respect that in, like, private, or not even private, but when you're talking to someone, you have to be like, what, drugs? They're doing this? They're taking our children? And it's like, yeah, that's your business, my dude. What are you... Are you serious?
Yeah, he's like, what'd I say about this poison? These kids shouldn't touch it. And I don't know, did they say how old he was? Was he like 14 or something?
Shoot, I don't remember if they said, yeah, I mean, you kind of get the idea he's anywhere, you know, like a high school kid or something like that. And it's these new designer drugs, because back in 1999, like ecstasy, what a crazy new thing. What is this all about?
Yeah, that's for old people now. we don't even know what that is, old people. Wah, the ecstasy? We don't even design drugs anymore. You don't even know what drugs we take these days.
Mikey has his moment where he's like, oh yeah, that was your grandson? They said his head was just smashing against the rocks with the current or whatever he says. Just a classic Mikey, like when he was in the hospital with Jackie, just kind of doom and gloom, almost like Livia Soprano in a way, I guess.
Yeah, but he's so cheerful about it because Livia Soprano's all sad, but he's like, oh yeah, that I heard that happened. That sucks. That guy got blood poisoning or whatever from eating just a regular fish. He would say that when you were eating fish and chips or whatever. Not that an Italian would. But yeah, so then we got Junior hanging out with Olivia, speaking of, and she does this thing she does where... She tells the leaders of the mob what to do and then insists that she doesn't know what she's talking about. She's just a crazy old lady.
What I do like about this, and I know I'm jumping like way ahead, but I like that later in this episode, we see that Tony knows this is a thing. So it kind of gives us a better idea, like, because we've been seeing these scenes with Junior and Livia Soprano and how he's like looking for her approval or like going to her basically for advice in a weird roundabout way. But then later we see Tony do the same thing. So you kind of get the sense that maybe Tony's dad did that. Like it's this weird, I guess maybe not that weird. I guess it's like, you know, with Italian people and their mothers and food and all that, I guess it's a weird tie-in. But I do like that it's kind of explained a bit more that this has been a thing. And of course she's always doing her like, oh, what do I know? Oh, no, I'm just an old lady.
Yeah, and I mean, it's clear that she has a role right now anyway that, for example, Carmilla does not have as far as she just wants to blank it all out. And I mean, she's always said, I don't know nothing about that or whatever, but she's still like the nexus, the point around which a lot of this moves, and she has an understanding of it. and moreover has like an understanding of the men around her and a connection to them that Carmilla is not the person Tony goes to talk out his problems. Melfi is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, so Olivia starts talking about Hesh and basically hinting to Junior that he's an important player here, and this would really kind of stick a thorn in Tony's side if you, a good way to throw your weight around and show Tony who's boss here.
Yeah.
By, you know, adding some tax and maybe some points on the money he's making, whether what is Shylock business or whatever he's doing.
What's Shylock? What is that?
Shylock is like, isn't it? It's like a loan shark. But I mean, it's like.
Yeah, it's from Shakespeare, the Merchant of Venice, the Jewish money lender there. So I guess I was gonna say
specifically Jewish. I know that, but it's like a money loan shark.
Money and horses, they go hand in hand, I tell you.
And we even learn in this episode that Hesh also is what a cliche Jew, huh? He also ripped off a bunch of black artists back in the days with his record company, decided to give himself some writing credits on some pop songs. So
out of all these characters, Hesh is the one I relate the most to, probably. I think I like him. But he goes to Tony and talks to him about what's happened, where Junior's come and demanded $500,000 buckaroos and 2% on all his business. And yeah. Tony's not happy about it, but they can't, like, he's the boss, kind of, so how do we grease this up? How do we oil the wheels?
A good way that the audience knows that Hesh is, like, a smart guy and reasonable dude, because he's even saying, he's like, look, I'm not, because you know, if this was Christopher, who is young and dumb, yeah. Christopher would be like, what? I'm not paying this. Tony, this is, we got to get the guns. We got to go to war. But Hesh, you know, he's a smart guy. He's clearly been around a long time. They always talk about how he was close with Tony's dad. So he's even saying, like, look, I get it. I probably should be paying something. That's the boss. That's how this works. This is how this has been built. He just, he just thinks it's a little bit unreasonable, which, as we know from Junior, usually he'll do the standard requests, but go a little bit extra for himself.
Yes. So Tony has already had a failed sexual encounter with Irina, the Russian Guma.
Yeah, it's Guma.
So then he has a dream where someone's under the covers doing something. And I swear I thought it would be Meadow just for some extra psychological torture there.
We're not at Game of Thrones HBO yet. This is quite a time.
Yeah, no, it's Melfi. Right letter, but wrong person. But it's a dream. So this is where he starts realizing what he's feeling, I would assume. Then there's the anniversary dinner, which goes exactly as planned, and they have a nice evening together, the Sopranos, and go home and have sex. Perfect.
No, it doesn't quite go that way. But this is where we start getting introduced to New York. So this is kind of important because we do meet Johnny Sack here from New York. And we start to get the impression of what that relationship is. Because we, in these other episodes, they always talk like, oh, New York has support for this guy. Everyone thinks New York supports them because Junior's saying it. Then Tony thinks it. But then the other guys are like, no. So now we're getting a little bit more of an idea of what's going on here. And they're kind of like the higher ups to go to for some of these issues, supposedly. It's almost like going over someone's head in a way, going to New York.
But I assume from my understanding, it's limited at the moment, but I assume it's more of like parallel rather than like above his head, because they're clearly like allied or whatever, but it seems like a larger version of how all the capos kind of handle their own shit. These two, New York and Jersey, handle their own sides of the river. I would assume.
Yeah, I think actually the way you're putting it is probably a bit more accurate. I guess... Yeah, because they, I guess not going over his head, but they do mention, like, basically Hesh going to Tony is more of an insult, because that's like saying that Tony has more power than the boss, and he's supposed to be, you know, the boss of the captains. So yeah, you're right. It's more like a third party that can kind of like assess this situation.
Yeah, because later in the meeting they have, he says, you know, Hesh is not just a friend of you, he's a friend of us as well, you know. rather than, you know, Hesh, like, yeah, it's not quite like going above their head or whatever.
And I know we're not at the meeting yet, but I love the when they're placating Junior, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Like everyone's kind of like, what am I gonna step to this guy? Oh no, like everyone. And it's done so well because it's in like a weird bad actory type of way. Like they're able to hit that right level where it's so clear. Like even if we weren't obviously the audience that knows what's going on, it would seem a bit off. Like, wait a minute, why are they hyping him up so much? And kind of it is like a little kid where it's like, ah, you beat me. You beat me in an arm wrestling match or something, you know?
Yes. Yeah, and when we get introduced to New York, New York also gets introduced to the idea that Tony's actually the one who's in charge, because he kind of says like, ah, I knew it, you're still in charge or whatever, or you're the one running things. And he's like, don't say that, wink, wink. But yeah, Carmilla's not happy, obviously, because he went away during their anniversary, and like they get their little cakes that say 1 and 8, so I guess it's their 18th anniversary.
It's such a great reveal, too, because... you know, kind of drops in. We just see Tony talking to a guy and, you know, we start to learn a little bit about what it is. We do see Carmilla in the background, but at first you just assume maybe they went to the city for dinner. And it's so great because they're just, she's mad. And you're like, oh, okay, why is she this mad? And then, yeah, the people come out with the happy 18th anniversary. It's like, oh, okay, clearly what a great choice, Tony Soprano.
Yeah. So then has another therapy session and talks about side effects, and it's kind of established that it's not a medical thing from the Prozac, what he's experiencing, his diminished libido, because it happens at night, maybe when you're having a sexy dream about your therapist. But that's a pretty short scene. That's pretty much what that covers. He brings more coffee again, so we get the pattern recurring there that's going to be broken.
We learn that she has car issues, right? Like gets a call, very unprofessional, takes a call during a session, but she kind of tries to explain herself. I still don't fully agree with it. I think it's very unprofessional, Dr. Melfi, but that's a whole nother show.
I agree. And to be fair to Tony, he is killing it with these jokes of like, talking about, when did you have your last prostate exam? And he's like, I don't let people wave a finger in my face. And she bursts out laughing. So he's like, yeah, I'm killing it right now.
Well, yeah, because he got her in that earlier episode with Plead the Fifth or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's got some zingers for sure.
Yes, but now he's all, you got a nice laugh and everything. So, but yeah, we get to the meeting and the deal being made, and you're right, they're definitely like, oh, this fucking guy, oh my god, and like really trying to make him make a reasonable decision, but also because obviously if they tried to, like, you can't force Junior to do something. Tony handles this situation really well, I guess, in the end.
And then Hesh almost pushes it a little bit because they're dropping the 500K down to 300, and then Hesh does his thing, 250, and then there's like a small moment where like, oh no, did you just blow this whole thing? But now Junior's a reasonable man, he'll take the 250. A couple things we kind of passed over. There is that question at the beginning with Tony and Melfi where she, you know, brings it out of him, like, all these women in your life are Italian, why did you choose me, or why a woman, kind of stuff we were talking about in the previous episode as well. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, I guess, goes in again with when Tony was sitting with Meadow in the previous episode, and he's, you know, she's like, Italian, 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 because it's like, you're going to be an Italian Vogue, you're going to be the spokesman for Italian Baskin Robbins, and like all his, you know, keeping close to his roots. Mm-hmm. And I like the way this plays out because we keep seeing, I mean, we get a little bit of the, like this, the whole thing is how Tony can't get his dick hard unless he has these dreams about Melfi. Mm-hmm. And we mostly see the sexual scenes with his side piece, not with Carmilla. They have a discussion, but it's not even like in bed where something happens. It's just in the car after their anniversary. So I like how that plays out because it's just this weird, like, Carmilla's clearly getting fucked over, no pun intended, in this like relationship and what they have, and everything she feels is so true and like on the money. But then it ends in this moment where he's telling her, "You're my whole life." And it's really like, it's really sad when you think about their relationship.
Yeah, it's pretty, that's a good summary. Just the last sentence in itself, it gets pretty sad when you think about their relationship overall. I think that's pretty true, unfortunately. But that scene was probably the most touching part of the episode still. Yeah. When they're sitting there, like when he's just him sitting there in a deck chair and her coming up and sitting next to him is like, whoa, what's happening? Like they're being not awful to each other.
Yeah, intimacy and closeness. Because yeah, it is, and you do get the sense. It's not like he's lying, but there's clearly like it's not all true. I know I'm jumping around. There also was that before the sit down, Carmela is buying furniture, and it's like a huge truck, tons of shit, and Tony makes some comments about how she's been spending like crazy the past week or so.
Yeah. Yeah, and he also is with his girlfriend, his Guma, and wants her to dress maybe more businesslike. And I'm like, fuck it, Tony. Tony, we get it, okay? But then it feels so awkward. I feel so awkward when he's in the therapy room again, and then he tries to explain what he was doing, but he's saying it's Carmilla, and he's like talking about how he wants them to dress like her, and I'm like, no, why is this happening, Tony? But I guess it's an inevitable step to get past. Melfi's right when she's like, yeah, this means I'm actually helping you, that's why you're attaching to me in this way. Because yeah, if we do move forward to the climax of that sort of storyline, I like her assessment of the situation, which is like, you think I'm all gentle and listening and whatever because I am what you need me to be right now to get better, but that's not who I am. You don't know me, bitch, she should have said. But yeah,
and it's kind of like it is clear it's not really what he's getting, and it gives more credibility to what Carmela's feeling. Like outside of having some girl that he just fucks on the side, like her thing is that this is someone that's helping him and that he can talk to just about what, you know, what's going on in his head and what's, you know, hurting him emotionally. And to some people, that's like way worse, that emotional bond, and something more to be jealous of.
Yeah.
And I do like that, you know, because earlier the Russian Guma throws the candle at him and burns him, but he's putting it on Carmela in the story because he doesn't want to tell her that that's the truth. And the Guma is so funny in a lot of these scenes. And I love when he's trying to tell her to like dress business casual or what have you. And she's like, "You want me to dress like a man?" And he goes, "No, you fucking wackadoo."
Yeah. Yeah, so he tries to kiss Melfi then in their next scene.
It's so cringy. It's so it's such a perfect those moments when you're like, no, don't do this, or you hope it's a dream again.
Yeah,
because there's always an element where I'm like, okay, wait, no, this is just another dream, but no, he's really doing that, and he's kind of being all not sheepish. Sheepish isn't the right word, but like, he's not being angry. Like, if he reacted angry to her denying him, you'd kind of be like, ah, fuck you, you piece of shit. But he's more kind of like lovesick, and it's like more pathetic and more sad in a way.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm getting the, like, this is not what I come to The Sopranos for. This is The Office. Like, this is, I don't usually need to pause The Sopranos because it's too awkward of a scene, you know. Usually if things get awkward, someone just fucking caps someone, so that breaks the tension nice and good, but not here. But also, she's at home with a book, and I thought like, oh yeah, this is the scene where she reads her psychology and learns what the fuck Tony's doing because he's being an idiot. But no, this is the scene where her car is stolen and brought back because Tony fixed it. And it's like, even if you are lovesick, Tony, like, be a fucking human being for once and like remember that that's not what people do. Like, that's no one's gonna think that's cool, really. Right?
Yeah, no, it's such a hilarious thing where every little bit of information Tony gets, he has to use it in some way where he thinks it's gonna paint him as this hero. So he hears she has car troubles, and you know, like a lot of people, when you have car issues, I mean, it's here in America anyways, maybe people are honest internationally, but you know, you have a car guy who's trying to like trying to rob you. He's trying to throw in extra stuff, diagnostic fees, this and that. Oh no, this didn't work. We need another part. What is it like in Sweden? Everyone's very honest and like, oh no, clearly this is a starter.
Nah, that's an international thing. I think that's it's more of the international union of car dealerships is just the same everywhere. Mechanics, I suppose. Gotta make a living.
Well, it's great because it's right in line with Tony Soprano. Because I mean, this is in the same lane as, you know, firebombing your friend's restaurant so a hit doesn't happen there. He's like, okay, yeah, we'll just steal your car, fix it. Yeah. Put your car back like nothing ever happened. And the mechanic scene's great because she's like, it was starting. She brings it to the mechanic because it's working. She's like, it started right up in the morning. And then I brought it to the store and then it started up again. They said, I need a new starter. And then the guy's like, lady, look, I would love to rob you, but even I'm not gonna put a new starter in with a new starter.
Yeah. So then Mikey goes and throws a guy off the good old death bridge, which we've visited before, and finally get a payoff of someone getting thrown off there. And I was like, maybe he'll be okay. Maybe he'll be fine. And he's just floating down there, face down. I'm like, I'm not sure. It's probably pretty shallow down there.
And it doesn't seem like he even gives that guy that much money. It seems like he gave him like $100 because there's some witnesses, and they're kind of a little shook, obviously, because you just saw two guys throw someone off a bridge, and then they walk over and they're like, what happened here? And he's like, oh, it's crazy. The guy said he didn't have anything to live for or whatever. And I do love to get the scene ends. You hear someone off screen go, how much he give you?
Yeah, but or I think
$100.
Hang on, let me see. But I think it was, yeah, how much did you give him? So it's the other guy saying it.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, you're right.
So then we're back at the, what is it? Satyatelli's, the pork?
Oh yeah, Satriellis.
Satriellis. Italian pork sausage. And we got all the sad capos coming in. They all look gloomy as fuck. And Tony's dealing with all his private, like, can't get his dick hard shit this episode. So I love that that comes in contrast. And it's really true when he says to Hesh, I don't want to be the boss. I have enough stress right now. I can't even get it hard when I'm not the boss. How am I going to get it hard when I'm the boss if I got even more things to worry about?
Yeah, and I like his comment where he's like, I thought only Uncle Junior could make me look like that, because everyone's clearly annoyed and defeated with what they're dealing with.
Yeah, because he's shut down the poker game. He threw a guy off a bridge, and he squeezed Hesh for way too much money. So they ask him to go talk to Junior. So he goes to talk to Olivia instead and says, maybe you can talk to Junior. And, you know, Olivia, by the way, it's nice to see she, like, despite her best efforts, she is starting to fit in this place, and people know her name. She knows people's names. It's better than where she was before. She would never, ever admit that, obviously. But I think some of the resentment of being put in here and, like, babbling, oh, it's full of babbling old crazy women or whatever. Like, I think the resentment must be going away as she's acclimatizing to this place, because she's not being that awful to Tony or to Junior, even though she tells Junior to squeeze Hesh or whatever. She's being a bit more reasonable and actually invites Tony to come and have coffee with her, even if she, like, snaps, bring the cookies, like a crazy person. But she's actually inviting him and not being that awful.
Yes, well, and it all plays, because you could see that her room does look like her house, like Tony makes the comment, because everything looks very, it looks comfortable, it looks nice, and you could see it's all the same stuff that she had at home, and it kind of does hammer the point home now that it's like, it's not about that it's not even about being in the home anymore, it's just this weird principle thing with her, because clearly she can live a much better life here at Green Grove than she was at home. And I will say one thing that Tony mentions, there's a broken reading lamp that he has back home. I'll just say that could be that the broken reading lamp could be an important thing. That's
all right.
But I do love how, yeah, she's making the comment about the lady who's like, Olivia, you want to play bingo later? And she's like, maybe. And he's like, degenerate gambler. She's a yeah. And then when she's yelling about the neighbor who's using the water, she's all yeah, day man. With the water, water, water. Just classic looking for things. But yes, she's being much nicer to Tony. And we see the flip side when he came with the macaroons a few episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And she wanted them, but she wouldn't admit it. But now she's like, put them there. I'll have them later. Like, she's all excited. He doesn't bring macaroons. He brings, like, biscotti or something like that.
But first, she makes sure, is it almond? And he's like, yeah.
Right.
And he's like, all right, put it there then. But to be fair, in the audio mix, if I had a neighbor that used water like that, like they make it loud. I don't know if she's supposed to seem crazy, but I'm like, yeah, I'm on her side in that scene. Like, how are you supposed to record a podcast, for instance, if you got that in the background?
Exactly. But I like all the stuff we learn in this scene where, yeah, it does seem like they have a little bit better rapport now. She seems a bit more chipper and kind of like not doom and gloom, but I mean, she's still doing her thing. She's still pointing out small things and being mad about it. And then yes, Tony starts kind of trying to do the Uncle Junior thing. He thinks he's planting little seeds to have her talk to Junior and make sure Junior understands that he can't eat alone. They kind of say a few times, like, can't just be at the top eating alone, making everyone kind of hate you. You want them to fear you, but maybe not hate you.
Yeah, but she kind of says to deal with it yourself, right? I mean, she's not going to do that. Yeah,
she does her thing where she kind of plays a little dumb. She doesn't know that business. You know, you should talk to him. Who am I to say things to him? But I do like that. Like I said earlier, I like that we get the idea that Tony is kind of aware. And Tony knows that Junior will listen to her for the most part, that he respects her and will listen to her.
Yeah. I know it's probably, they're probably, from my limited perspective, they're probably not going to end up on the best of terms, but it's still nice when people aren't clawing each other's eyes out and like increasing each other's blood pressure by a million because I guess it's because Tony has other shit to deal with in this episode. If he didn't, it would be his mother acting terrible. But just, I don't know, seeing them and seeing him not be driven crazy by her, it's good because it adds a bit of, like, otherwise it would just be too much if every scene was like, you know, her setting fire to the kitchen and so on.
Agreed. And you get the sense, I mean, either way, it's Tony's mom, so it's not like he would abandon her. But you see, based more of a tender moment that kind of Melfi was looking for a few episodes ago, because you'd have to think, even with it being his mom, there would have to be some moments like this for Tony to, you know, be going out of his way the way he is for her.
Yeah. So we have Carmilla going to Father Phil, talking about her, all the issues going on. And he actually kind of, he says, like, we reap what we sow. He's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And I mean, I guess he kind of says it's partially on you that this relationship isn't, you know, like you would want it to be, because she's allowed him to run off with Gumaz, not done her wifely duty. This is very Catholic. And, you know, divorce is for losers who don't want to go die married. It's like, okay, yeah. And so on and so forth. What was your take on this scene?
I mean, it was a classic case of victim blaming, that's for sure. Father Phil really laying it on thick. I mean, there are definitely elements where I could see a priest saying some of this stuff, but it felt like he was laying it on so thick where I don't know if it ties in again where he just doesn't want to be, he can't be the catalyst for something real happening. I don't know if he's afraid of some sort of blowback. Not that Tony would kill a priest, but I mean, I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, it's such a bizarre relationship and the way he's reacting. I don't know if there's some, it feels like there's some more selfishness behind it. Again, I don't know if it's because he likes, you know, dabbling in that nice house and watching movies or whatever. But yeah, it's really it's such a, hearing what he says, it's kind of like, Carmilla, don't listen to this fucking guy. Are you serious?
Yeah, serious? Yeah. I mean, he's her Melfi, but he's just worse at it because he's instead of Melfi doing the right thing and leaning away from the kiss, he's kind of like, maybe I should kiss her. Maybe I should throw up in their bathroom. So clearly he's not, and it gives bad advice as well. He says to pray, you know, that's going to do nothing. So pray for forgiveness and that you're going to be able to do this together. But I mean, I guess it does lead us to the moment where they're sitting on those deck chairs together.
Yeah.
Because the next scene we have is with Melfi and Tony, and we already kind of went over how she wants to know why he thinks he's feeling that and so on, and lays out that, no, I am acting the way I need to act to get you to talk and to get you to come to a better place. And also, I think she says, like, because we're in the beginning of this process, like, I'm being very calm and listening. I'm not challenging you as much because that might be for later or something.
Yes. Yeah. Because this is where he basically, he does come out and say, I love you. Like, it's gone past.
Yeah.
You could have wiped some of the other stuff away. It's just some weird, like, lust thing where it's another woman he wants to fuck or whatever. But now Tony is, no, to him, it's love. Like, and what is he has, like, his rationale is what, like, you know, I think about you all the time and I'm dreaming about you and what have you. And yes, Melfi lays it out pretty truthfully and basically is nailing what is happening. It's just that he's getting this phony version of a woman that's just going to sit and listen and kind of nod at everything he says. And maybe, you know, maybe give a little bit of tidbits here and there, you know, a little bit anecdotal advice or what have you. But then Tony is, he's still that, he's not getting angry. He's just kind of like, okay, well, you know, all that you're saying is you don't love me back. And it's this weird romantic comedy of the schlubby guy trying to win the girl over to him. I do like that. He thinks, like, oh, that means this is over. Like, oh, if you don't want me to come back, that's okay. But, you know, it makes sense because what Melfi's saying is that things are working. That's why he feels this way. So you can't just abandon him in this, even yes. though maybe she should, because they do yeah. bring up, she does talk about, like, how her car got stolen. And she starts asking about being followed because she's starting to kind of put things together.
Mm-hmm.
Tony doesn't really cop to that stuff, right? He just kind of mentions the car thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's one important question here that we haven't brought up. Can we define this as Tony storming out? Because as everyone knows, we are trying to keep count and we're going to have meters up here soon, but we're keeping count on how many times he stormed out and how many times people die because someone gets thrown off a bridge in this episode. So are we still matching it? Because he says, you don't love me. And then he stands up and goes to the door. But the conversation started with Melfi saying, before we run out of time, I'd like to talk about blah, blah, blah. So is this just the end of their session or is this storming out? He's very calm. He turns around. He says, you don't want me to come back anymore. And she says, it's quite the opposite. Do we count this, Jim? Or is it just timing?
I think it could be counted.
I think so.
Even, well, the other one, too. The other one's not counted. Because when he kisses her, she specifically says, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Could you come back later? So that's not, even though he gets up and leaves after, that's not a walkout. I think this one counts because they're almost done, but there's not a... There's not a specific, okay, you know, see you Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah.
And he forced himself to walk out because he's reacting to what she's saying.
Yes, I agree. And yeah, then we have Tony and Junior sitting down at the ball game. Who's playing? Is Tony Junior playing?
I don't know. I was thinking the same thing. I don't think he is. They don't show AJ or anything. I don't know if they just decide to, like, this is a good meeting spot or whatever in a big crowd of people. But I guess you could assume either way.
Cincy. I'm just trying to see, like, where are they? I don't even. Okay. But yeah, anyway, he starts talking about Roman emperors. Junior's not getting it. He's like, what are you getting at? And then he gives the great analogy from the start, or I guess anecdote, fable from the start of the episode. Yeah, it's a fable. And that gets him to understand totally. Why didn't you just say it was all about bulls fucking cows? Jeez.
And yeah, because he's just trying to hint at him, like, look, you're kind of upsetting everyone, and you're being like, you might be doing stuff that you're allowed to do, but clearly you're being a bit more unfair, and you have to keep, like a good leader, you got to keep your followers happy and at least want to follow you.
Yes.
And yeah, it works out because what he decides that he breaks up that $250,000 that he got from Hesh, kind of gives it out to the capos, make everyone kind of feel better about themselves.
Yes.
We cut to the horse farm, and that's where Tony's with Hesh kind of talking about the situation now.
Yes. And the reason Tony's a genius, despite his idiotic romantic dalliances, he like this scene works because of his and Junior's relationship, where he doesn't think he can go to Junior and say this shit. So he tries to go to Olivia at first, who tells and she tells him to go and talk to Junior. And he does. And he actually manages to do this, and he managed to get his point across and everything, because he's put Junior in a position where he's willing to listen to people. He's willing to be amenable. He wants people to like him. That's kind of a, like, he wants to be the boss, yes, but being the boss just means that everyone likes you a lot. He's narcissistic in that way. And Tony's also dealing with all this other stuff, and it is true when he says he doesn't want to be the boss, because Junior even notices, like, are you okay? You've been acting all mezzo morto lately. And, like, there's actually concern, and it's not like Tony's playing it up or anything, because it's all true. So it all works. But yeah, he's concerned with his own stuff, his own bullshit stuff, and that's why Junior's not like, he's gunning for me, he's gonna take my place, because he doesn't actually want to.
Yes, yeah, and we see a little bit of it, because he reiterates it to Hesh as well when they're having their discussion, like, and it's almost like you almost feel like Tony's gonna come out and talk about his dick problems to Hesh, but
yeah.
Because he's kind of being a little bit more open and talking about like the stress and what he's dealing with. And it's interesting because it's like Tony could never come out and talk about his dick problems to like Hesh or Silvio or Polly or something.
Yeah, unless maybe Hesh has some sort of ointment that could fix it. I feel like he might. He might be have a patent on that he stole from someone. I don't know.
Yeah, what he's saying is he's envying the horse. It's the old like, yeah, look at this horse. He don't have bills to pay. He doesn't get to go to work. He gets to just chill in the field and eat grass all day or whatever.
Yeah, and they have a nice slow motion shot of the horses, which is kind of dreamlike. I mean, we don't talk as much because we're into the plot and everything, but we don't talk as much about the look and feel. But it's kind of dreamlike when he's out playing the baseball game and the horses all have that quality. Like you said, it's almost like, is he dreaming?
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly not, but yeah, it's there anyway. I just noticed my monitor went to night mode as well, so that's why it went all yellow. That explains the color correction.
You in a dream?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, so Hesh, that's a good scene, and I love, obviously, he talks about the money, and yeah, they split it up, but everything, and Hesh is kind of like, and Tony's like, and he's like, here's the money, I could never take the money off you, gabagoo.
Yeah, because he's like, $50,000, that's a pretty good payday. And then Tony says something like, yeah, it just sucks that it had to be your money or whatever, but nah, he brought it, he's got it for him. Aha, I couldn't take money from you, old Jew.
Yeah, and he's even like, didn't even enter my mind, of course. So that's good. But then we have the scene in the deck chair, which we talked about, where they have a bit of a connection, Carmilla and him. I mean, him realizing, I think, that, like, it's almost always the case that Melfi says something to him, and he's like, no! And then he's at home, and then he's like, yeah, she was right. Because he's like, yeah, it turns out your feelings aren't your feelings, or whatnot, and he's all introspective about what's going on with him. And,
I like, because it feels like a real breakthrough for Tony to say that. And I think that's why, like, Carmilla's reaction, like, right after he says that, she kind of kisses him. Because it's, yeah, he makes that, like, he's mad about it, but it's showing some kind of self-awareness and maybe some progress. Cause yeah, it turns out what you're feeling isn't what you're feeling, and what you ain't feeling is what you're feeling.
Yes.
And it is a dumb thing to say, but it's kind of like, wow, like you're picking that up from therapy. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, well done. I wanted to mention from the chat where Mikey Carbs said that he wanted to rewatch the series, but it's too hard to only do an episode a week. And I don't want to do it and not do it fair, especially since I've seen it before and know what's to come. And he asked, do you think it's harder to do since you've seen it before, or rather than a first-time viewer? And I'd say I have the hardest job here, especially after an episode like this, because it's a decent episode, but it's not like I'm satisfied with this. Especially like having all the pictures on the wall and stuff, I'm like, fucking hell. I had that 2 episodes ago, kind of, and that's fucking 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, I just want to watch like 5 episodes of The Sopranos when we finish this, and I can't, so I have the hard job.
Yeah, I agree, because Mikey, if you've watched it before, I get what you're saying, because you get a little anxious for like, oh, I remember this great episode coming up or whatever. But it's not the same, because at least you know that's coming up, so you could still be excited about it, but it's not like, you know, when you're binge watching a show for a first time, that's why you're like, yeah, let's get to the next one. Oh, hell yeah. Like someone watching Game of Thrones or whatever. So I do think it's tough either way, but I think it's a bit easier if you already know where we're going.
Okay. He says he's going to try his best and do it this way. Thanks, man. I appreciate you coming along on this journey, even though I don't know if we've... I mean, Caesar was in the chat as well. I don't know if we convinced him or if he'd seen it before. Yeah, he says, it's easy for me since I watch anime as it airs almost all the time. Sometimes the subs are delayed too, lol. Yes, Caesar, but did you watch The Sopranos before? That's what I'm interested in. Am I the only one going on this journey? Because I've tried to convince people, and it's like The Sopranos is so long ago. Yeah, you've seen it. That's good. But it's so long ago that if you haven't seen it, it's almost like people like me go, you know what? I had my chance in my youth to watch The Sopranos. Now I'm an old man. I can't start watching The Sopranos. That's what it seems like. Like, people are hopping on board Game of Thrones still because it's not over. Sopranos is so over that either you've seen it or you pretend forever that you have, even though you haven't. So I don't know where to find people who are willing to make this commitment, especially 1 a week.
Just let them know that it's like you get to be a little 6 years old again by rewatching this show. But yeah, I think and the other thing to Mikey or to someone who has watched the show, well, I guess I think this is a benefit to either one, whether you've watched the show before or you're watching for the first time. When you obviously binge watching is great, but this is a good show clearly to sit and kind of marinate with it a bit, because they put things there. And I feel like as we get later in the show, they do it even more where there's more to kind of discuss, and like a fine wine tasting. I know that sounds pretentious as fuck, but still it's a nice change of pace where, you know, clearly we're in week 6. A regular person would have watched 86 episodes basically by like week 4 or whatever, if I'm being generous. Yes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's fine to, you know, just like, give me the show. And then you're like, wow, that was great. But I think this is a nice way to really sit in and see and kind of go over what they're going for. Mm-hmm. And I think in the other side, it's going to be a more rewarding experience.
Yeah. And Mikey also asked if it was something that didn't get big overseas, because it seems like anyone over the age of 25 has seen it in the US. And that's an interesting question. The only sort of frame of reference I have is myself and my friends who are over 25, and I'd say most of us haven't watched it. But on the other hand, my parents watched it when it was coming out. When it was coming out, I was 9 years old. I was close to my 6 years old status that I am at now. So no, I didn't watch The Sopranos. I was too busy watching Pokemon. But I'd say people maybe over 35 have watched it. But that also means most people I hang out with, like, it's not a thing that gets brought up as much either. So maybe you just do the Jacob Burrows route and pretend you've seen it and then just say, oh, yeah, therapy. Huh. man.
And it's kind of like a timing thing. I mean, the show was getting big at the time when DVDs were new. And then even then, when the DVDs would come out, they were super expensive. And clearly, like, streaming is the way to go and downloading. But Sopranos, it's not like it's on Netflix or whatever, given a lot of people have HBO Go. But I feel like by the time HBO Go rolled around, like, it was more about Game of Thrones and all these current shows. And yeah, it just became more of an afterthought of like, oh, I could watch all the episodes of The Sopranos. But like you said, Jacob, it's still, even though it's considered such a great show, it's not an active discussion with, you know, people in your everyday life or what have you. You know, whereas Game of Thrones, it's like when Game of Thrones is new, it's everywhere you look. So you're like, all right, I better watch this fucking show. So I feel like that's why we're doing a great service for people out there, because we're giving absolutely. You a great avenue where we can, you know, sit around the water cooler like it's 1999 and hash out The Sopranos.
Absolutely. And if you are listening in the future in 2021 or whatever, and you're binging The Sopranos and binging Cut to Black, wow, you're doing a great, you're doing the Lord's work. Well done. Thanks for coming with us on this very speedy journey. That's not how we are experiencing it, but I'm glad you get to.
Absolutely. And I mean, where were we?
I mean, we're kind of at the end because they have the party. They have the dinner.
Yes. Yes. Because we already kind of went over the scene right before where Carmilla, you know, sits with Tony and they kind of have a tender moment. Carm, you're my life. And yes, then we're having a dinner with the mob family, Tony and Junior and all the capos are there.
Yeah. And sweaty fucking John is pouring wine for everyone, and he has kind of, oh, what's that little thing right by his name tag? Why, it's a camera. Can you imagine they make cameras at small gym? And I guess at the funeral, I thought them just shaking hands with Junior, everyone, and kind of paying their respects, I thought that was enough for them to FBI people to know that he was the new boss. But now they actually get around to it. I mean, I guess they need their vacation time too, or whatever. So now they get around to changing their cork board because they take pictures and they say it like to the new boss. And Tony gets to say boss, and like they take pictures. And so no one can miss that Tony's definitely not the boss as they change up on that cork board. And that is where the episode ends.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent already of that previous episodes, the episode before college. It is hammering it home a bit more. And I think we did make a joke of like another show have the scene of the FBI. They don't go that far because it's, you know, there's no dialogue or anything. You just get the idea of how they're tracking the family. And it still works as just a nice reminder that, you know, we see things so comfortable. We see that they can easily throw a guy off a bridge and it feels like nothing ever happens. So it does work as a nice reminder, like, no, there are people that are, you know, on their tail, maybe not doing that great, but they're trying. They're trying again.
Yeah, but the joke, I think, for us was that they would, in another show, in the first episode, have that to explain to us, the viewers, who these people were. And that's what I appreciate them not doing, because they're obviously, this is not what that scene is for. We all know that before the FBI. So this is just to let us know what the FBI is kind of doing and sort of introducing us into that part of what's going on as well.
Absolutely.
So that is the end of the episode. And I mean, speaking of shows that you better fucking watch, we will be doing a live stream right after this one about Star Trek Disco. That's Discovery for all you non-disco heads out there. And that will be on the podcast feed if you're not listening live. And you can find that at showswhatyouknow.com or at youtube.com/showswhatyouknow, where our live streams are archived. What else do people need to check out, Jim?
Oh my goodness. If you go to awesomepedia.org, you can find more of Jacob Burrows. You can find some comics, podcasts, videos, all kinds of great stuff. You can find more from me at jimandthem.com, podcasts, comics, music, all kinds of great stuff. Yep. So, you know, there's just content galore.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what else, Jim, you can find?
What else?
Cut to Black.